This is Healthline, a joint venture of WTIC News Talk 1080 and Yale Cancer Center. Yale Cancer Center is a resource for cancer programs throughout Connecticut, developing new advances in prevention, screening, diagnosis, and treatment. On Healthline, you'll hear from some of the leading doctors in the country. Healthline is not intended to provide medical advice. Yale Cancer Center urges you to consult with a qualified physician in your community for diagnosis and for answers to your medical questions. And now, our co-hosts, oncologists Ken Miller and Ed Chu.
Good morning and welcome to Healthline. My name is Dr. Ken Miller. I'm the director of the Survivorship Program at the Yale Cancer Center in New Haven. I'm here in the WTIC studios with my colleague and co-host, Dr. Ed Chu, who's the chief adult oncologist at Yale. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Ken. Healthline with the Yale Cancer Center is our way of providing you with the most up-to-date information on cancer care every Sunday morning at 8:30 a.m. here on this station, WTIC News Talk 1080. Our Healthline program features some of the nation's leading oncologists and cancer specialists who are on the forefront of the battle to fight cancer right here in our state of Connecticut.
Each week, Ed and I are joined by a different expert from the Yale Cancer Center. Together, we'll discuss the myths about cancer, the latest treatment available to cancer patients, and advances in clinical research. Our goal is to give you help by sharing with you the latest information and also to give you hope. And if you'd like to submit a question about cancer to Healthline, please email us at healthline@yale.edu. Or you can call 1-888-234-4YCC. We'll try to answer your questions on the air today or in a future broadcast. And if you're interested in listening to past editions of Healthline, or if you'd like to learn more about a specific kind of cancer, all of our shows are now posted in audio and written format on the Yale Cancer Center website, which is www.yalecancercenter.org.
Today, our program focuses on the treatment of lung cancer in recognition of National Lung Cancer Awareness Month, which happens to be in November. And our guest today is Dr. Scott Gettinger, Assistant Professor of Medical Oncology, who's a specialist here at the Yale Cancer Center in the treatment of lung cancer. Scott, thanks so much for being with us today on Healthline.
Thank you.
Scott, let's start out with a quick overview. And, you know, what is lung cancer and how many people are diagnosed with this disease each year?
Well, there are about 165,000 people are diagnosed with lung cancer in the United States per year, and unfortunately, the majority of those patients succumb to their disease, but we're doing much better these days picking up earlier tumors and treating them successfully.
When a patient, thinks that he or she may have lung cancer, what are the types of symptoms that are associated with the disease?
Symptoms can be from disease within the chest or from metastatic disease in the brain, bones, for example. So usually from local disease, patients can experience cough, and often these patients are smokers, so they might have a change in a baseline cough. They might feel chest pain, they might have shortness of breath, they might spit up some blood, they might develop some hoarseness. If they're suffering symptoms from distant disease, they might have bony pain, headaches, and then systemic symptoms such as fatigue and weight loss.
When people have symptoms like that, sometimes they jump to the conclusion. They say, I have a cough, or I'm having pain. It must be cancer. And so a lot of times people don't go out immediately for screening. And so can you share a little bit in terms of, when people have those symptoms, what should they do? What kind of tests might they expect? And will they necessarily get bad news?
Well, I think it depends on a couple of things. First of all, if you have a patient who has a history of heavy smoking and develops, say, a change in cough, that patient should speak with his primary care physician. And, a first step might be to get an x-ray and to really further evaluate the situation. But I think a first step is often, the internist or the family practice physician.
And Scott, for our listeners, what are the typical risk factors associated with lung cancer?
Well, about 85% of patients diagnosed with lung cancer have a history of smoking. So that leaves 15% with no history. So there's certainly other causes than smoking cigarettes. However, smoking is clearly the biggest risk factor. Other risk factors that we're learning more about are radon, for example, which can be found in basements of patients' homes, depending on where they live and the background of where they live. Sorry.
Okay. And any other types of exposures that might predispose one to developing lung cancer?
Well, certainly secondhand smoke, There are other chemicals and industrial agents that can, you know, predispose. Asbestos by itself isn't the strongest risk factor, but asbestos with smoking clearly is a risk factor for developing lung cancer.
And what about this notion that if someone's quit smoking, say for, you know, a few years, that the risk of developing lung cancer goes back to kind of the normal average risk of any individual?
Never goes back. It definitely goes down, and the more years out, less chance of you developing lung cancer, but you'll always be at a higher risk than the general population if you have a substantial history of smoking cigarettes.
Is it ever too late to quit?
Never too late to quit.
Good. Thank you. I want all the smokers out there to hear that loud and clear.
That's the best thing that someone can do if they're worried about lung cancer is try to cut down and try to quit if possible. And certainly we have programs here that help patients do this.
Mm-hmm. Scott, there's recently some news published in some of the bigger journals, New England Journal of Medicine, about diagnostic tools for finding lung cancer. Can you share that with us?
There was a recent article presented within the last couple of weeks in the New England Journal looking at CAT scan screening for patients at high risk for the development of lung cancer, primarily patients who smoked. And the results of the study were quite compelling in that, you know, many early stage lung cancers were found, and the majority of these were cured. I think the overall cure rate of all the cancers that were found was 80%, but when you look at patients with just clinical stage one, which represented 85% of the patients, there was an 88% 10-year survival, and if they had surgery within a month of diagnosis, 92% estimated 10-year survival. And these are very important numbers. However, the problem with the study is that there's no control group, so we're not really sure if finding these cancers earlier will improve overall mortality. And there are some ongoing trials in the United States looking at chest x-ray versus CAT scan in terms of screening. At this point, it's maybe a bit premature to offer CT screening to all patients with high risk. I think the more important question is, who should we screen? And we at Yale, we're trying to develop a system to figure out who should be screened. And not only smoking history goes into this, but family history. And we're also developing blood tests and sputum tests and breathing tests that might help us to determine who are at greatest risk for developing lung cancer.
Now, there have been some earlier studies, Scott, remind me if I'm incorrect, that compare chest x-ray with CT scan. And those earlier studies already showed, right, that the CT scan was much better picking up earlier lesions.
Well, the studies I'm aware of, there was a study looking at x-ray versus nothing, and clearly there was more early stage lung cancers found, but overall those studies did not show any improvement in overall survival in these patients. Just because you find a tumor early doesn't mean you're going to improve survival, because a lot of these tumors will end up never causing any problems. Another thing you have to remember with CT screening is that many, many patients, we will find abnormal results. We will find nodules. The vast majority of these nodules, well, at least 50%, if not more, you know, end up being benign nodules. So once you tell a patient you have a shadow or a nodule on CAT scan, that induces a lot of anxiety. It might lead to unnecessary tests and morbidities from these tests. So it's a very complicated situation.
So what's the message that you'd like to leave with our listeners out there who are listening today as to whether or not, right, it's reasonable for them if they're a heavy smoker or have risk factors for perhaps developing lung cancer, whether or not they should get this spiral CT scan?
Well, first of all, to date, insurance companies are not paying for these spiral CT scans. With the data from the New England Journal, this might change. I think patients who have a high risk should definitely speak with their primary care physicians about the possibility of CT screening, about getting enrolled in clinical trials or programs that are looking at CT screening, and most importantly, to work on stopping smoking if that's what they're continuing to do. We'll see what happens over the next few months if insurance companies start picking these things, picking up CAT scans. But right now, it's too premature, and the best way to really look at this is in a clinical trial.
And just one last question. So again, just for our listeners, about how much does a spiral CT scan cost?
Well, it depends on who you ask, but if you look at the New England Journal article, a Yale physician was asked this question, and the price was, at Yale, at least about $800. If this is going to be covered by insurance, this will go down, and some people suggest that maybe $200-$300 will be the price if this becomes approved.
Well, we'd like to remind you to email your questions to us at healthline@yale.edu. We're going to take a short break for a medical minute, and please stay tuned to learn more information about the treatment of lung cancer with Dr. Scott Gettinger.
It's estimated that over 2 million men in the U.S. are currently living with prostate cancer. 1 in 6 American men will develop prostate cancer in the course of his lifetime. Yet major advances in the detection and treatment of prostate cancer have dramatically decreased the number of men who die from the disease. New treatment options now provide hope for all men diagnosed with prostate cancer. Screening for prostate cancer can be performed quickly and easily in a physician's office using 2 simple tests, a physical exam and a blood test. With screening, early detection, and a healthy lifestyle, prostate cancer can be defeated. Clinical trials are currently underway at Yale Cancer Center, Connecticut's only federally designated comprehensive cancer center, to test innovative new treatments for prostate cancer. Patients enrolled in these trials are given access to experimental medicines, which have not yet been approved by the Food and Drug Administration. This has been a Medical Minute, brought to you as a public service by Yale Cancer Center. For more information, visit our website at yalecancercenter.org.
Welcome back to Healthline. This is Dr. Ken Miller, and I'm in the WTIC studios with my co-host, Dr. Ed Chu, and our guest, Dr. Scott Gettinger, who's an expert in the treatment of lung cancer at the Yale Cancer Center. Scott, if you would, tell us, what are the stages of lung cancer, and how do you think through what treatment to offer to patients? Okay.
Well, generally, there are two general types of lung cancer. There's non-small cell lung cancer, which accounts for the majority of patients. 85% of patients with lung cancer have non-small cell, and there's 15% who have small cell. So let me just first talk about non-small cell lung cancer. There's actually 4 stages of non-small cell lung cancer, but functionally we can divide this into 3 categories. First, we have early stage disease, and these patients generally do not have any lymph nodes in the center of their chest and mediastinum, and there are surgical candidates, and generally they're offered surgery, and depending on the characteristics of the tumor, some of them will go on to get adjuvant chemotherapy. The second group of patients are patients with what we call locally advanced disease, and most of these patients will have what we call N2 or mediastinal lymph nodes, and these patients tend not to be surgical candidates. And the way we treat these patients is with concurrent chemotherapy with radiotherapy. It's a long course of radiotherapy. It's about 6 to 7 weeks with concurrent chemotherapy. But we do have a cure rate of maybe 1 in 5 or 1 in 4 patients, depending on which agents and which study you're looking at. And the third group of patients are patients with incurable disease, generally metastatic disease outside of the lung, but sometimes a pleural fluid in your lung will also count, can't be cured. And these patients, we generally will offer chemotherapy, and with chemotherapy, we can improve their survival, improve their quality of life, and the therapy is generally well tolerated. Small cell is a much easier cancer to stage. It's 2 stages, limited stage versus extensive stage. Limited stage means that you can encompass all the disease in one reasonable radiotherapy port, and you will give these patients chemotherapy with radiotherapy for the possibility of cure, again, maybe 1 out of 5. The other stage for small cell is extensive stage, where we offer chemotherapy, again, for improvement in quality of life and improvement in survival. And these tumors tend to be quite responsive to chemotherapy.
So, Scott, it really sounds like when you evaluate and develop treatment strategies for patients with either small cell or non-small cell lung cancer, it's really critical that you do it within a kind of a team-based approach. And maybe you can expand on that a little bit for our listeners.
Yes, I think when you approach a patient with a lung cancer, the best way to approach a patient is with a multidisciplinary group of physicians and other healthcare specialists that really help diagnose and stage the patient. Every new patient at Yale is presented in one of our tumor boards, where there are medical oncologists, surgeons, radiation oncologists, pulmonologists, pathologists, radiologists, and a host of other physicians. Each case, we look at the radiographic images, we look at the pathology slides, and we together come up with a consensus concerning the diagnosis and the treatment recommendations. And I think coming to a center like Yale, that's where the benefit is, where, in this situation, certainly more than one head is better, and especially if they're coming from different disciplines.
Scott, there's a perception that many patients and families have that if you receive chemotherapy or radiation therapy, that you will be sick. And so what, if you can tell us, what methods do you use to try to reduce the side effects of treatment?
Well, in terms of chemotherapy, I don't think our chemotherapies today are the same that maybe a patient's mother or a patient's grandmother or grandfather, you know, has told them about. You know, our chemotherapies are better tolerated. We know which doses to use, and we certainly have many more supportive medications. One of the big concerns about that patients have when receiving chemotherapy is nausea, especially with particular agents. We have very, very good anti-nausea medications that we use prophylactically, preventing the development of nausea, and we're very effective at doing this.
And Scott, once a patient has had their lung cancer removed and perhaps have had radiation therapy or adjuvant chemotherapy, you know, what are your recommendations? What's your guidelines for following up that patient afterwards?
Well, that's somewhat controversial too. Here at Yale, we have our own algorithm how to follow patients, and generally what we do is after a patient receives definitive therapy, meaning either surgery or chemoradiotherapy for cure, we will repeat a CAT scan 4 to 6 months after that. Then we repeat a CAT scan at 1 year after that, and then annually thereafter.
So it sounds like part of that is looking for any evidence of recurrence, and some of it is to look in the future to make sure that they don't develop a second cancer.
Definitely. In addition, we also, you know, will follow up the patient very closely, you know, generally every 3 months for a year or two, and then we start spreading it out a little bit. At 3 or 4 years, you know, you start thinking that this disease has been cured, and then, you know, scanning like the CT screen we talked about before can pick up a new primary. And certainly patients who have a history of lung cancer have an increased risk of a second unrelated lung cancer.
And typically, when would patients kind of represent with either, you know, recurrence of their original disease or present with a second primary?
Well, recurrence of disease, usually it's within the first couple of years after you're treated for your disease. And recurrence can either be locally or, unfortunately, commonly distant sites. If it recurs locally, there is always the possibility of another definitive procedure. In terms of developing a second primary, that risk goes on for the rest of your life. It's the same risk that you had before getting the lung cancer, which is usually from your history of smoking cigarettes.
Scott, let me ask you in general, before we take a break, a lot of the therapies that we're going to talk about in the third segment are what we call targeted therapies. Is there more hope now for people that are diagnosed with lung cancer?
I think that treating lung cancer has definitely changed in the last 5 or 10 years, and we're beginning to see that patients are living longer, they're being treated more aggressively. We certainly have numerous agents to use, both conventional chemotherapy and targeted agents, which I hope to talk about a little bit more. But I think that we're seeing a change in the face of lung cancer.
But again, I think, you know, for lung cancer, as it is for breast cancer and colon cancer and for a lot of the other cancers that we treat, obviously if we can either prevent it, the cancer from coming, or, you know, detect it at an earlier stage, clearly I think that's still the best way to cure these patients.
We definitely feel that way, and we're aggressively creating a program of screening using CAT scans, but also using blood tests and sputum and breathing. So clearly that's important. The other thing that's very important is prevention, prevention in terms of stopping the smoke, you know, and that's been a problem. You know, smoking has decreased in the United States, but it's still prevalent, quite prevalent, and we have to work on that a little bit better.
So Scott, you mentioned blood tests, right, for screening, early detection. Can you say a little bit more about that?
Well, at Yale, we do have some researchers who are looking at different molecules within the blood that circulate within the blood. And so let's take a certain example. So say you have a patient who has a nodule that's found on a CT and you're not really sure what to do with it. And again, the majority of these nodules end up being benign. So what we propose that we can do is we can take a blood sample, and if that blood sample has this molecule which is circulating, this might be more suggestive that is a lung cancer. Also, in high-risk patients who don't have nodules, sometimes a lung, you know, a blood test or maybe even a breath test might help to find something that's circulating that predates the development of a radiographic appearance of a lung cancer.
Well, we'd like to remind you to email your questions to healthline@yale.edu. We're going to take a short break to listen to a survivor story. And please stay tuned to learn more information about new treatment strategies for lung cancer with Dr. Scott Gettinger from the Yale Cancer Center.
A few years ago, the diagnosis of cancer was a death sentence for many patients. But today, thanks to advances in clinical research, we're turning the corner in the battle against cancer. There are over 10 million cancer survivors now living in the U.S. They are the true heroes in the war against cancer. Here's the story of a hero from Hamden.
10 years ago, when I was diagnosed with aplastic anemia, there was no cure. After teaching math for 35 years, I was forced to retire. Then I met Dr. Tom Duffy at the Yale Cancer Center. He told me about a new procedure called a mini stem cell transplant. He encouraged me to put my life in the hands of Dr. Stuart Seropian, one of the few doctors in the country doing this procedure. On January 17, 2004, I had a stem cell transplant at the Yale Cancer Center. At age 70, I feel like a new man. I owe a great debt of gratitude to the terrific staff at Yale Cancer Center. They literally saved my life.
This survivor's story has been brought to you by Yale Cancer Center.
Welcome back to Healthline. This is Dr. Ken Miller. I'm in the WTIC studios with my co-host, Dr. Ed Chu, and our guest, Dr. Scott Gettinger, who is an expert in the treatment of lung cancer at the Yale Cancer Center. Scott, there's been a lot in the medical literature and in the news about a drug called Avastin for the treatment of people with colon cancer. And can you tell us a little bit about how that's being used in people with lung cancer?
Yeah, Avastin actually has recently been approved for lung cancer. About 2 weeks ago, it received FDA approval, and this was based on a large study that showed a survival advantage of adding Avastin to standard chemotherapy. And what Avastin is it's a monoclonal antibody to a circulating molecule in the blood called vascular endothelial growth factor. And this molecule is very important in angiogenesis. The benefits of using Avastin are really twofold. The first benefit is tumors are hungry. They need to be fed. The way they do this is they develop new blood vessels that supply them with nutrients. So Avastin, on one hand, can stop this from happening, essentially starving the tumor of its necessary nutrients. The other way it works, ironically somewhat, is by normalizing the blood flow around a tumor, it actually can increase the penetration of the chemotherapy into the tumor. So this trial that was done, this clinical trial, found, you know, significant survival advantage, and the median survivals for patients with advanced, you know, incurable non-small cell lung cancer was over a year, which is, you know, an incredible number for non-small cell lung cancer.
Now, are there any side effects associated with Avastin?
The main side effect that we're worried about in lung cancer is spitting up blood. And certainly, we have certain eligibility criteria for treating patients with Avastin. Patients who have a tendency to bleed, we would not use Avastin. Other problems with Avastin, which are sometimes paper toxicities, meaning that they don't really cause any clinical problems, but, you know, they potentially could, would be hypertension, developing protein in the urine, and a couple of other things.
And not to scare people out there, but certainly for colon cancer, one of the other potential complications from Avastin is an increased incidence of arterial thrombolic events. So that's a fancy term for meaning either patients are at increased risk for developing TIA, strokes, or if someone has underlying cardiovascular disease, heart disease, then there are increased episodes of angina or heart attacks. Typically, these episodes are seen in patients who are older than 65 years of age.
Well, in the lung cancer patients that were enrolled in this trial, if these patients required anticoagulation, meaning a blood thinner, for any condition, whether it be a clot in the leg, a clot in the lungs, TIA, or something like that, they were excluded because we're really not sure if patients can be safely treated with these agents. Similarly, if you had brain lesions, generally we would not give Avastin because of the fear of bleeding, although this really hasn't been realized.
Although for any patients who were out there who happen to be on Avastin, either for lung cancer or colon cancer, and are on Coumadin, I think the experience, which is pretty extensive at this point, would suggest that there really is no increased risk of complications.
That's true.
Scott, I wanted to ask you something about biological therapies and also targeted therapies. I know that's one of your fields of expertise. Can you explain to the audience what are targeted therapies and what are biological therapies?
I think targeted is somewhat of an ambiguous term. We use targeted to distinguish are newer therapies from conventional chemotherapy, which tends to be more toxic. In reality, chemotherapy is also targeted, some more so than others. But with that said, I guess one definition for targeted therapy would be therapy that targets processes or pathways that are uniquely disrupted in cancer cells. And, you know, with advances in molecular oncology, we're certainly learning a lot about the development of cancer and the pathways that are involved. So with this knowledge, we've been able to develop certain agents that target different parts of this pathway. And in lung cancer, we actually have two agents, the one we just spoke about, Avastin, and another agent that targets a pathway known as the epidermal growth factor pathway. This agent is called Tarceva, both of which have shown survival advantages in large randomized trials.
And the nice thing about Tarceva is that it's an oral drug, so people can actually take it in the comfort of their home.
Definitely.
Scott, you and your colleagues have been focusing a great deal of your efforts on developing newer therapies and developing what are called phase one, phase two clinical trials. Perhaps you can explain to our listeners what you're doing in that regard.
Well, our belief is that many of these new targeted agents will help to change the face of lung cancer. So the way we're exploring this is we have phase one trials, which are open to many tumor types, and we're investigating a lot of newer agents that have shown quite promise in the lab. These agents target different pathways. At Yale, we have an agent called sunitinib or Sutent. We have an agent called sorafenib. We have an agent called rapamycin. We have we also have some novel chemotherapies, one called Abraxane. And we're looking at all these agents, and we're seeing if we can find activity in lung, and then we're going to expand these trials to look at only lung cancer patients. But we're very enthusiastic about the early results from these trials.
Okay. Scott, I noticed you're the chairman of a trial looking at a drug called chlorhexidine for treatment of patients with relapsed lung cancer. Can you tell us a little bit about that as an example?
Yeah, chlorhexidine is a novel chemotherapy that we're looking at for patients with small cell lung cancer. Chlorhexidine has established activity in hematologic malignancies. It was actually developed here in conjunction at Yale, so it's an agent that we are looking at very closely. And so far we've seen some encouraging results, and we're just enrolling more patients, and we'll see what happens.
And Scott, you're also actively involved in developing, I think, a very novel immunotherapy approach to lung cancer, an approach that actually really has its roots in the laboratories here at Yale.
This is called transimmunization, and really Yale's the only place that is doing this for solid tumors, and we're looking particularly in lung cancer. And what transimmunization is teaching one's own immune system to fight its cancer. And we do that by removing blood from a patient's, exposing it to the tumor. Usually the way we do this is from radiation. And then we put the blood cells back into the patient's body. Now they're primed. They've seen the lung cancer, and they'll teach their other immune cells to fight the lung cancer.
Well, if you have questions for Dr. Gettinger or for Healthline, I encourage you to go to our website, yalecancercenter.org, for more information about cancer and the resources available to you. Before we sign off, Scott, in your opinion, what are the key points you'd like to share with our listening audience about the treatment of lung cancer?
I think the treatment of lung cancer has changed, has evolved. We are in the process of trying to turn lung cancer, which has been a deadly disease for many, many years, into more of a chronic type of condition, using our chemotherapies sparingly, using our target agents at the right time, finding patients who respond to one agent versus the other agent, and really tailoring therapies. And I think the next 5 years will be very exciting, very interesting, and I think we'll see clear benefits in survival and quality of life of patients.
I want to mention, too, again, it's Lung Cancer Awareness Month, and it's a good time to remind our listener to quit smoking. I'd like to thank Dr. Scott Gettinger for joining us on Healthline.
Yes, Scott, it's been great having you. Maybe, Scott, you can just put in a quick plug for a program that's happening in 1 week's time.
We will be having a conference called Frankly Speaking About Lung Cancer, and this is really for anyone who's interested in the community about learning more about lung cancer, what to expect, and what modalities there are. The phone number to call to find out about this program is 888-700-6543.
Terrific. And remember, tune into WTIC News Talk 1080 every Sunday morning at 8:30 a.m. for Healthline with the Yale Cancer Center. Our next program will feature a discussion of supportive care and pain management for cancer patients. Until then, this is Dr. Ed Chu.
And Dr. Ken Miller.
From the Yale Cancer Center, wishing you a safe and healthy week.
You've been listening to Healthline, a joint venture of Yale Cancer Center and WTIC News Talk 1080. Join us next Sunday morning from 8:30 to 9 a.m. for another edition of Healthline on WTIC News Talk 1080.